to our panel discussion. And we're going to start with Thomas Talbot. He works for the New York Health Department, New York State. And fun fact is that he's been in Alaska for 10 days hiking around, and I think he told me he went ice climbing the other day,
yeah,
too. Nice job.
Another picture.
Oh, there we go. So without further ado, Thomas, please.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So I was staying with a friend of mine in Homer, and I woke up in the morning and looked out the window, and this was his front yard with a moose and two babies. And so the wife of the friend, we were trying to figure out which flowers they were going to eat. She was trying to figure out if she planted the right flowers. And so we watched them for quite a bit. But this is out the window. So if I can figure out how this works. Okay. So first of all, I'd like to mention that I got involved in this. Vicki Booth and Jessica Worcester called me up one day and wanted to know if we'd worked before on a previous project and wanted to do this sub-county assessment of life expectancy. And it's a multi-state project. And actually, we have some cities also, or counties. And it's a collaboration with CDC and CSTE. And we're focused on calculating life expectancy at a high geographic resolution across the United States. So I'm going to talk first about some of the challenges we hit. It's more methodological, and then you'll hear some other talks about what they did in their different states. So there are going to be some differences, but I'll sort of set the stage. So we went out and we got 2008 to 2012 death certificate data for New York State, excluding New York City, and that's because New York City has their own group vital statistics, and it probably would have taken me several months more to do that. So we got about 450,000 deaths, and we geocoded 99.97% of the deaths through the census tract, and we're quite proud on that. We did a poster on about how we did that, and I'll go over a little bit of it because some of you that was probably what took us the longest was to get the geocoding done. So first we did batch geocoding. We had a New York State geocoding service, which has high resolution address points on the top of all the houses, which is probably one of the best services in the country. It doesn't try to interpolate along streets or anything. And that got most of them, well over 95%. And then we went back for the ones that didn't geocode. We were able to match death certificate data to hospital records because there's another source of address information. And sometimes when you have a bad address, you might get a better address in a different record. And we geocoded those. And we still had problems with a few. And so we, in some cases, we usually knew what zip code they were in. We might not have a good street address, or it might be a post office box or something. So if a street was completely contained, if a zip code was completely, here's the thing. So these are zip codes here, these yellow ones in the different colors, and this represents a census tract. And so all these yellow zip codes in rural areas, this tends to happen, and sometimes in urban areas. So all those ones, if we know what zip code they're in, we know that the zip code is completely contained within that census tract, so we would just assign a census tract. We really didn't care where in the census tract they were. We just wanted to make sure they're in the right census tract. We also had information like, you know, you might have a road like Plymouth Road. And so I this is sort of a stylized version of it. This isn't actually real data. But so you might have, say, a census tract like this. And if this was to represent the county, we knew what county they were on and we knew what road they are on, but we didn't know what the address of that road, you know, we didn't have the 23 Plymouth Road. But we could look at all the segments that had the name Plymouth Road. And if Plymouth Road only existed in that census tract in that county, we could do it. But if we had something like a road like Broadway, which is right here, we could not reliably assign it to the census tract. Or if you have a main street, sometimes you might have a main street in more than one town in a county. So those we did not assign them. After that, that's where graduate students come in. Because Doug Doan, who did the poster recently, unfortunately it's taken down, he actually looked at all the addresses that couldn't geocode, and there was 4,000 or 5,000 of them that he actually went through, and he looked at Google and other sources, and was able to correct. Some of them were like apartment buildings and things like that, and he could find a substantial number of them. And then we were only left with a very small number at the end, where he couldn't find them either, and so we imputed where they were. We knew the race and ethnicity, and the age and some other characteristics about that death. And so we did a probability weighting. It's been written up in, Frank Bosco, who works in the health department, has done it a lot with our cancer registry. And so of those, ones that we geocoded, we were only left with 137 that we couldn't geocode. So we really wanted to try to geocode everybody so we didn't get bias in our data, because frequently when you geocode rural areas, don't geocode as well as urban areas. So I'm going to talk about some of the challenges after that. So we went out, and one of the problems is to calculate life expectancy. You need to have a denominator, which is the census. So one of the problems is the U.S. assigns people living in group quarters to the location of the facility, like a prison or nursing home or a dormitory in a college. But we found that deaths in these facilities may be recorded as living elsewhere. Who knows where they put them, but they're not living where they should. So I'll give you a couple examples of this. So here's the University of Buffalo, population of 5,700 people. I say college students are invincible because they don't think they're ever going to die. But we know that there's suicides and, you know, parties, and they might fall off a dormitory and, you know, when they're drinking. So we know over a five-year period somebody should have died here. But they're probably recorded at where their parents lived or some other place. So we decided we were going to exclude some of these census tracts because we have, 5,000 people there, and we know that, we didn't want to just aggregate with a neighboring area, because these University of Buffalo students could come from any place, probably most of them in New York, but even other states and countries. We came across the same problem with prisoners. When I was doing this, we had a good prison escape, and they spent a couple $1 million trying to capture these two prisoners who ran around upstate New York for a while until they finally shot one and caught the other one. But again, this is a couple of correctional facilities where the stars are. And we could see them in Google Maps or Google Earth when you pull up the aerial imagery and say, oh, what are these? It looks like there's some sort of institution there. So again, prisoners were being recorded as where they came from, not where they died or where they may even been living for the last 10 or 15 years. So we excluded some tracts. We excluded 15 tracts with no land area. There are some tracts that are only water. There could be a lake in that, or part of, off the coast of, Long Island or something. We excluded 52 tracts with 50% of the population living in group quarters, and those were mostly prisons, jails, and colleges. We excluded two tracts which were on military bases. Again, we realized we could not reliably use that either. There are a couple airport tracts where there are large airports which were nobody lived. And then we had one tract that was on an unpopulated island. Turned out, I don't have all this, I did a longer version of that the other day, but it didn't exclude that much of the population. There was a nice tool developed in England, called the CIFO tool, which is it's basically an Excel spreadsheet where you take your death data and you take your population data, and it will estimate life expectancy for all the tracts. It's just cutting and pasting your data into these, relatively easy, very well documented, so the benefits of using the CIFO tool is we found it, at first we thought we were going to develop our own tool, and then we realized they'd done such a good job of doing it. So we found that it was user-friendly, well-documented, no programming required. It uses the adjusted Chang method, which is the most commonly used way. You could also explore kind of what-if scenarios. If anybody used Excel, you could change the numbers and see what would happen if this or that happened. And it does not require expensive software, so since many of us had Excel. So the results showed a number of tracts with life expectancy estimates well over 100, and we know that not very many people live to be that old, and so and they had very large standard errors. One thing about this CIFO tool, it also calculates your standard error in years, like plus or minus so many years. And we could plot that out. We could look at the margin of error, which is the 95% confidence intervals, plus or minus, and then the number of deaths. And you can see that the margin of error, which is about twice the standard error, declines as you get a large number of deaths in some of those census tracts. So we decided we would pick a cut point of about 60 to try to reduce that standard error. We found out that about 11% of the tracts did not have adequate numbers to provide reliable estimates. Which is a fairly small number, so we decided to aggregate. We also decided not to do males and females separately because that would have meant that we would have had half our tracts that would not have adequate numbers. So we aggregated the tracts together. After aggregation, we recalculated the standard errors, and then we did a little bit further aggregation. Even with 60 deaths, sometimes you get standard errors above 2. We used a tool that we developed called the Geographic Aggregation Tool to do the aggregation. And any of you that are interested in it, we can provide a site where you can download it from my site. In rural areas, aggregated areas did not cross county boundaries. This is how the aggregation tool works. This is in real data, but you'd have like the number of tracts, the number of deaths. You put it through this R tool, and it will assign a region to each of those tracts. And so if this was your original data, it looked like that, and you wanted to have at least 60 deaths, and then it will produce a new shape file with the attributes, and each of these new areas will have at least 60 deaths. This is just an example of, I think this might be the Utica area, how the aggregations, all those red arrows are symbols of where tracts got aggregated. And you can see the number of deaths in each area. So we started with a little over 2,700 tracts, and then we ended up with 2,400 areas when we were done, when we did all those exclusions, et cetera. Once we finished that, we thought we were going to be done, but you're never done. So we noticed very large life expectancies in some of the border areas along Connecticut, New York City, and other areas. So I went out to our vital statistics people and said, can I get the neighboring states? And he said, oh, yeah, we'll give you all the neighboring states except for New York City. So we were able to pull in the neighboring state data. And then we could compare what the percent of out-of-state deaths to New York State residents were. And so you see those brown areas, 30 to 50% of the deaths actually occurred in their neighboring states. And so those were the areas that we also had very high life expectancies. Since if you die someplace else, it looks like people are just living forever, you know. So we were getting Florida deaths and all kinds of deaths, and that was great. But typically the problems are worse along the borders. Here's a map showing the change in life expectancy. So those red areas there, it means it changed the life expectancy between 3 and 10 years, which is actually a substantial amount. So if you do try to do this project, make sure you get the out-of-state information. We ran across some other problems. We had deaths in census tracts that the census says nobody lives there. And we've come across this before where the census, I don't know what they do, but like in this area in Yonkers, I mean, you can go there and buy an apartment. You can go to Zillow and see what the price of houses is. We know there's cancer cases there, but the census says nobody lives there in this apartment complex. You can go to Google Street View and see the apartment buildings. And then I'm just going to quickly, I think I got 1 minute. Okay, so here's some of the graph, the results. I could see you looking at the clock. Okay, so this is, once you've done all this, then you can get into the fun stuff. So this is looking at life expectancy by income. You can not only geographically aggregate the data, but you can aggregate on other features. You could take all the poor neighborhoods or income. And you could see the strong relationship between income, and you could see the difference between males and females and things like that. This is looking at educational attainment. Again, you can see that percent of people that graduate from high school. Insurance is a little bit more complicated because a lot of people are on Medicaid and Medicare, so we'd have to look at that a little bit more carefully. This was an interesting one where I'm trying to look at two variables here, poverty and percent African American. So in very wealthy neighborhoods, you don't see any difference, you know, if there's a percentage of African Americans, their life expectancies are very similar. But as you get into the more poor neighborhoods and look at race, you will start to see some differences here. And so that's interesting that in the poor neighborhoods with more African Americans living there, you actually do see a difference. Now, this is kind of an ecological analysis. One of the things to do would be to look at the individual death certificate data of those people living there and do kind of a hierarchical analysis where you're using community characteristics and individual characteristics, but we haven't gotten there yet. We did some mapping. Left side is left side. Life expectancy, and you can look at percent African American. This is this is Capital District. This is poverty. Again, the map on the left stays the same, and I'm just showing some. So you can do some of that. And these are my email addresses. Since I'm retired, send them to both. Because I can't read my work email address at home. So that was it. So.
Thank you.